Declared he knew, quote, of no artists in ancient Orissa whoever followed the Shilpa Shastras, end of quote. His book had a very unfavourable reception. Nevertheless, his stress on, quote, the individualism and originality, end quote, of artists, I believe to be a fruitful attitude. Another initial text I referred to in my written paper is Susan Sontag's essay Against Interpretation, which called for a concentration on the art object in itself and concludes with a statement, in place of a hermeneutics, we need an erotics of art. I go on to suggest that the very well-established art historian Ratan Parimu might be taken as an exponent of Sontag's erotics of art. In his paper, Kajuraho, the Chandela Sculptor's Paradise, Parimu stresses his concerns with sculptural values, with such things as the rendering of the undulation of the spine and so on. And I also refer in the written paper to the photographer Raymond Bernier as a practitioner of an erotics of art. After these introductory remarks in my written paper, my last reference to a text is Parimu's remark distinguishing between the sculpture of the Lakshmana and that of the Kandariya temples in Khajuraho. Quote, he says, the warm smile and the sparkling eyes of the faces from Lakshmana temple are replaced by a blank expression on the faces of the Kandariya Mahadeva. Inspired by Parimu's judgment, in this paper I shall examine smiles and eyes, though I'll go beyond smiles to consider facial expression more generally, and I'll go beyond representation of the eye to consider gaze, the eye in relation to its object. I shall consider these aspects of sculptured form and behaviour within a strictly defined field, that is to say, in the erotic scenes on the frieze around the base plinth of the Lakshmana temple, and on the erotic juncture panels that Professor Dai was speaking about, on the erotic Antarana panels of the Lakshmana, Vishwanatha and Kandariya. In the case of the Lakshmana frieze, I consider every face on the erotic panels. In the case of the juncture panels, for reason of space, I shall be selective. I am then attempting an erotics of erotic art, helped by the fact that there is no rule book for erotic art. Let's pass that over briefly. Those were Apsaras's, two views of the same Apsaras, cited by Parimu as an instance of beauty. I'm going to pass over those to move on straight away to a minor scene, because initially, before getting to my final goal, I just want to talk a little bit in general about gaze and smiles elsewhere than is my main concern. So we see here the longing looks of lovers, which is what Khajuraho's sculpture is most famous for. So we find this loving look even in small-scale lovers in unemphatic parts of the temple. So this is just a very minor scene, I think, from the Vishwanatha. But not the gaze isn't always mutual. It doesn't necessarily meet. What is often noticeable is that in couples that the woman looks at the man, but the man looks away from the woman. Sometimes this isn't clear. An important point, of course, is whether in the sculpture the iris of the eye is represented. But there's another problem here, of course, also that originally the painting, the sculptures were all covered in sculpture and in plaster and presumably painted. So there you see, I think, her iris, and maybe not his, one considers. I can guess what it might have been. So this is a matter of judgment, so I can't necessarily be correct. Of course, the woman's gaze is often directed at a mirror. We see elegant males with very elaborate hairdos in the sculpture, but we never see them looking at their mirrors. Presumably they needed to use them. We do get a reference in Kumara Sambhava to Shiva when he's dressed up in his wedding finery, looking at himself in the reflection of a sword. But I don't think in art, I might be wrong, it's only women that are represented as so doing. the woman's gaze, yes, is more forcefully directed, I think, than the man's very often. So it can be almost aggressive. So we're looking here at minor scenes from Kajuraho, not at my main theme. But also, of course, there the woman's gaze is perhaps expressing extreme disappointment. and here we see the reverse situation, an altogether remarkable panel from a little temple near a well-known temple at Sunak. First of all, you notice the enormous apsara sort of coming out from the wall between the pillars, and then you see that almost Terminator 2 type male figure, all straight lines, and then that very soft and yielding figure of the woman in a seemingly different stone gazing at him. Or again, it was totally different from the world of the gods, from the Vishwanatha, and presumably, actually, I think she's not yet looking at him. She's looking, but he's sort of pulling her face round to him. But often one has to sort of guess at the direction of the eyes. Parimu illustrates his remark about warm smiles and sparkling eyes of the Lakshmana sculptures with two illustrations captioned as belonging to the Lakshmana. Then my first reaction was to doubt the accuracy of this, certainly in the case of the 13A. But in any case, it would seem to me that you've got a better instance of a smile there. Though it may well be that Kajuraho is just not very good at smiles. Here's an instance Parimu cites in the same essay as an instance of beauty, though he doesn't mention her smile. But this Gyaraspur Rikshakar is an absolutely lovely smile. And again, at Bhubaneswara, you get lots of smiling apsarasas. Then to conclude these introductory remarks on smiles, this absolutely beautiful panel from Orissa, I think possibly from Kanarak, that's in the British Museum. There's a blow-up there of the Chowri bearer to beside Shiva with a saucy smile. But actually everybody, not the divine couple themselves, the faintest of smiles, but everybody else has sung 40 faces on that sculpture, and they're all smiling in one way or another. Even the lion and the lion and the bull, the lion's sort of simpering. Everything on Parvati's side is actually sort of feminine. Even the and the bolder and confident on the other side. And then I contrast that with the kind of norm of Kanarak, this kind of toothy grin by an ascetic about to be pleasured by three women, and so you've got an enormous contrast there in what's being expressed. So I turn now to the Lakshmana temple and the Lakshmana, the frieze round the base. I think actually this was covered over. There's the Martangeshwara temple is here, and then for a long time the gap was filled in. An interesting question is whether you see a figure on a figures on a couch there, and a couch. I could be pointing this, couldn't I? Yes. So, and a couch there, and a couch there, and the three blocks of stone. Whether you've got three successive scenes or one large space with three beds is open to question. I think on balance that you've got three. It's a big scene with three beds, and there you've got the central figure in possibly in control of the scene. The missing head there, damaged, but it is interesting that the owner of that head, his buttocks are actually protruding from the end. That's the only case in all this long frieze at any of the ends that the frieze, what is being portrayed within the frieze actually sticks out beyond that. And I think that's a sign of the artistic commitment of the sculptor here, that he was concerned to make a particularly fine sculpture. So we've got a missing head there. We've got two opposed heads there. I'll hurry on. This kind of figure is very important. He has been called a giant monk, Shapanaka. He's holding there. You can see his peacock feathered broom. In many ways, the main academic interest, or usual academic interest of these pictures, erotic pictures at Kajuraho, is what that he's holding, because as we shall see, the giant monks invariably naked and busy in sexual activity, and nevertheless hold one of these bottles. And then again, I'd also note this is rather expressionless face. The eyes are slightly skew-whiff. But the sort of rounded square shape is actually typical of the way these monks are shown on the scene. Here I've given the whole standing couple who look... we're bang in the middle of the orgy here, but they look as if they're rather above it, or they haven't yet begun, or I don't know. It's unusual that the woman is not looking at the man. She's looking outwards, so I'm not quite sure what that's expressing, but do note that that is actually very unusual within these kind of scenes. I mean, it's sort of heads... The figure there we see masturbating, but in the written paper I have some length of description about him. If some of these were modern sculptures showing the kind of inadequacy of the human experience, the way his hands disappear, the way his arms are drawn, that might be reading too much. We're moving now towards the central panel, and we're in the central panel, and the faces, it seems to me, within the central panel are much better defined. So we see here a figure stirring a pot. Who knows what is in it? And we see above the same figure the face of a woman looking rather ugly there. But we're seeing it not quite at the angle that the sculptor intended. But notice that the woman certainly has a smile. She is riding on top of the principal figure lying on the central bed, the Kashyapanika, the giant monk in charge of the scene, this perhaps somewhat bloated, but nevertheless, I think quite an impressive head. We'll come back to that head later on, actually. A woman, yes, in... We can pass quickly over these. Here we have, within that orgy scene, the only two... heads, the only two people who are actually looking at each other as they make love. He's rather sort of drawing back from her, and she's certainly looking very, very eager. There's a woman is being lifted up by a man, and her head has been destroyed. And the final head of a participant in the orgy we see here. And now her faces aren't very clear. The one really striking and amazing thing there is her left fist, her left hand. Oops. That's amazingly expressive. And of course, if one's thinking of expression, obviously, in some ways, it's artificial to think solely in terms of faces, because especially within sculpture, the whole body expresses emotion, and that's a very vivid hand. Now, we've looked at all the faces of the participants within the Lakshmana orgy scene, but what I haven't looked at, what we haven't yet seen, are the spectators. So we go back to the point there, where beside the Kshpanika is a woman who looks in the thick of it. She's naked, but she's lifting up her arm, whether she's on the way to expose her armpit, or more, is she not shielding her the other scene, part of the scene, from her view? Again, a very expressive face. Now, she's an indeterminate example of what we're going on to look at. He's not at all indeterminate. He is someone who is clearly he or she, the figure has a twisted back. It's only women, Kajuraho, who I think would have twisted backs like that. But he is an onlooker, a rather diffident onlooker. But then, Now we'll see a more significant instances, really, of definite onlookers at the scene, but who are hiding the scene from their view, but actually peeping as they look. So this is the sculptor's comment on the audience. I mean, the sculptor knows that this is something that's going to be deeply interesting, but yet at the same time should not be looked at. So this is I think very, very interesting. I now go straight on to there's one other erotic scene on that Lakshmana frieze, most of which is the long progression of an army, and there's this famous scene of much photographed scene of a man and a horse, and this figure we see there is standing watching that scene. There's one man looking rather arrogant and very confident, who is showing his penis to the mare, and then there's this rather rougher looking man, perhaps at the back with a smile of gratification, and then you've got the eye there, you see, is clearly done by the sculptor, interestingly. You've got that figure peeping, looking. But then even more interestingly, you have the figure on there, who is I take it, an admonisher, how terrible this is going on. And it's interesting that he holds a large post. Is it a club or whatever? Is he about to attack this very bad behaviour? And again, his face is extremely expressive with the way it's lifted and whether that is an intended ire. It's a look of extreme indignation, looking up to the heavens. And we do find a similar instance somewhere else, I think on the Vishwanatha, very minor, just something entirely on its own. But again, you've got this figure admonishing with an amazingly phallic-shaped club, and again, this same look of looking upwards to the heavens as to how can these things be, I think. So there's one more instance of admonishing going on, and so possibly one figure restraining an admonisher. A fabulous piece of sculpture, I think. Again, an odd piece. Now, moving on quickly to the juncture panels, which you see there all set out completely in front of you. You've got Lakshmana North, Lakshmana South, Vishwanath South, Vishwanath North, Kandariya South, Kandariya North. And I've blanked out the divine panels with deities. So we see the various groups. And yes, so I'm carrying on with the theme of people hiding their eyes. And so you see here two women on either side of the principal who are only much going through the motions of pretending not to look. They're really wholeheartedly sort of participating in what's going on, I think. And you've also got these minor figures underneath, which I'll skip over. Rarely, of course, the figures in the panels stand independently from those on either side. That's the norm. It's very striking at Kajuraho, where you've got so many figures all over the surface of the temple, but they're all looking out. But they're all very close together as they look out. But anyway, you've got there, I really put her in because it was a lovely smile, but possibly also she's seeing the same scene in the mirror. but then another instance of an onlooker here, an onlooker who is horrified by what's going on with these monks. Note the bottles. I mean, these bottles, there they are stark naked, but the bottles are still being shown. The monk there is masturbating above the woman beneath, but at the same time we might eventually note that he has his hand round under the breast there of the woman who has her eyes closed, or rather is half only half looking. Now I want to go over to the Kandariya, and just yes, my interest here is again the three figures at the base. Actually, the first one is an ascetic who's stroking his beard and looking upwards, but the other two, who I think are women, both have, again, their hands over their eyes. I think that they're not entirely clear, but I think they are hiding their gaze. Yes, certainly that last one was. And then on quickly to pick up on the scenes with the Kshepanikas, with the giant monks, who do frequently feature on the sculpture and carrying their peacock brushes. So these are the three. We've looked at that one. Sorry, where are we now? We're still over there. And just putting those two faces, you can see the similarity between the two faces. But again, also, I mean, if you compare to the person and the man and the mayor who looked a total ruffian, I think actually these faces are actually quite luminous, despite their activity. Contrasting there with this is the figure in the orgy scene on the long frieze, and there's a similarity, though he does look quite bloated, I think, in comparison to that. But certainly a similarity between the features. And then, yes, we're now going to move to the Lakshmana. Now, so again, possibly holding a peacock brush by the wrong end. Fabulous face, fabulous mouth. Is not that the most beautiful mouth at Kajaraho? Possibly, arguably. And then moving to the south panel, again, very often photographed figure of again a young Kshepanka with presumably with his brush, looking over his shoulder at the central couple. On the other side, a beautiful woman looking in the same direction but away. Now he is masturbating, and perhaps she is going to, but it's certainly a beautiful face, beautiful, wonderful hairstyle, but also a beautiful face. And then you've got the central lovers. I just did want to remark actually on his face, that although in some respects he's in a demeaning position, nevertheless, to my mind, that is a wonderful expression on the face. It's almost as if he's giving a kind of blessing to the couple. I mean, obviously this is highly subjective. How do you read these faces? But I think the chief point to be made is that it's legitimate to try and read them, and it's worth the effort. Almost finally, one of the most famous loving couples. Often, of course, when Kajaraho was first publicised and first written about, such photographs as this, such as this, were the only ones published, and the fact that you had those people on either side was omitted, so that it was quite easy to see this as a symbol of two in one. But of course, it's not. It's four people or five in the scene. And even there, of course, you can note, I think, very clearly, if you think about where the gaze is directed, hers is clearly directed at him and all his face, but his is looking down at her mouth. So there is a difference there. And then, my final consideration, the artist, the sculptor, portrays the audience. Perhaps this is some servant in the scene from a royal court, if a scene from a royal court is being represented here. So in some sense, her gaze is the gaze of us, or at least of the non-shocked viewer. So I'll end there. Yes.
Relevance in this seminar, texture connections with this?
Yes, it was first put down as the last paper in the whole seminar, because of course it is an anti-text. I should add that the written paper does include a footnote which deals with the Shilpa Prakasha, which you might say, as you did say, was a text which was relevant to the interpretation of the juncture panels. However, in my view, the Shilpa Prakasha, and certainly the Kama Kala Yantra, is a forgery. The manuscripts of the Shilpa Prakasha were provided to Alice Boner by Pandit Rat Sharma, who was in fact a noted forger. He collected blank pages of old manuscripts. The New Light on the Sun Temple of Kunairak is clearly a forgery. Those drawings are modern drawings, as Behera noted in his review. And I think that the doubt of the Sun Temple book also extends to the Shilpa Prakasha. And in my view, I think that the yantra that we see there, unless someone can say that they've seen a similar Karmakala mantra in any other text, to my mind, that is a yantra that was devised by Pandit Rat Sharma to fit in with the ideas of Alice Boner. And subtly different, whereas she built in circles, he did his solely in angles. So I would disagree, I think, with that, with any use of the Shilpa Prakasha to explain away. I think we are left without a textual resource in interpreting these sculptures.
I don't know whether this question is relevant. I thought, since your topic is about about facial expressions, there would be some connection between the whole theory of Navarasa. Whether you want to see any link between...
No, because it isn't necessarily the case that sculptors bore took any cognizance of the Navarasa. In a recent paper only published in Italian so far, I do look at, in discussing emotion and sculpture, I do carefully review B.N. Goswami's wonderful book on the rasas and painting and sculpture. And of course, everything that he says, both about painting and sculpture, shows wonderful insight. But to my mind, every time that he tries to make a specific connection between rasa theory and specific sculptures, he is not successful. To my mind, the two do not. When you try to make exact connections, they don't fit. But that's my view. I might be wrong.
Being I'd better stop here. That should be at least yet another long discussion.